Head-On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Air Force General Michael Hayden's nomination as CIA director won the endorsement of the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday in a vote that sets the final stage for formal confirmation by the full Senate later this week. The 15-member committee, which Republicans control by a single vote, approved Hayden's nomination 12-3 after an hour-long closed-door discussion. A new Zogby poll indicates that nearly half of the American public believes, quote, that so many unanswered questions about 9/11 remain that Congress or an international tribunal should reinvestigate the attacks, including whether any U.S. government officials consciously allowed or helped facilitate their success, end quote. The survey was of 1,200 adults via telephone. The Federal Communications Commission has told a Democratic congressman that they cannot investigate the National Security Agency's domestic data mining program because it's classified. In a letter to Massachusetts Democrat Ed Markey, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin said the program could not be scrutinized because it was classified. In a new audio tape allegedly made by Osama bin Laden, the al-Qaeda leader says Zacharias Moussaoui had no connection to the September 11th attacks on the United States. This statement surfaced on a website today. Prosecutors at the court-martial of an army dog handler said Tuesday he was part of a crew of corrupt soldiers who enjoyed tormenting detainees at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Major Matthew Miller said in his opening statement that Sergeant Santos A. Cardona harassed prisoners for, quote, nothing more than the entertainment of the accused and the enjoyment of the other corrupt cops serving on the night shift at Abu Ghraib, end quote. Cardona is accused of letting his tan Belgian shepherd bite detainee Mohamed Bolendia on the leg badly enough to require stitches, according to the charge sheets and investigators' reports. Of the 100 U.S. senators, Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania, and Hillary Clinton, Democrat of New York, have accepted the most from lobbyists this election cycle, according to a report released today by the group Public Citizen. The report examines donations by the 50 biggest donors on the Hill. Santorum topped the list of those who have benefited most from lobby gifts, raking in a whopping $560,738. Clinton, the second biggest recipient, trails Santorum by over 25%, having taken $417,575 from lobbyists and political action committees. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy!
Come on!
We'll help you.
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
The ACLU of North Carolina is asking for information on the Greensboro Police Department's surveillance of political groups. The request, submitted May 15th, stemmed from a clash between police and protesters at a downtown rally against President Bush in January. It was submitted on behalf of the World Can't Wait NC, which organized the rally, and five protesters. The ACLU is asking for all surveillance records on the World Can't Wait NC and the protesters, as well as police guidelines for surveillance. A year after combat soldiers leave Iraq, those with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder say they are in worse physical health, suffer more pain, and are more likely to miss work than veterans without PTSD symptoms, according to a military study out Monday. The anonymous survey of nearly 3,000 Iraq veterans is the first to look at a link between PTSD and physical symptoms. It was released at the American Psychiatric Association meeting in Toronto. In the survey, about 17% of the soldiers had PTSD symptoms. Compared with those without stress symptoms, they were much more likely to report all kinds of pain, from headaches to backaches and gastrointestinal complaints such as nausea and indigestion. The House voted Tuesday to further choke off the flow of U.S. aid to the Hamas-controlled Palestinian Authority, drawing the displeasure of the Bush administration and dividing the pro-Israel lobbying community. The measure, approved 361-37, would cut off aid to non-governmental groups working in the West Bank and Gaza, except for health programs, and would deny visas to members of the Palestinian Authority. Acts of violence have killed nearly 2,500 people and forced more than 85,000 to flee their homes in Iraq, the UN Assistance Mission in Iraq said Tuesday in a March-April report on the human rights situation. The fatality count was comprised by death certificates issued by the Baghdad morgue, the report said. The Medico-Legal Institute in Baghdad issued 1,294 death certificates in March and 1,155 in April, the majority of which had been deaths caused by gunshot wounds, it said. As a result of the pervasive violence, Iraqis continued to leave their areas of resistance either voluntarily or as a result of violence or threats by insurgents, militias, and other armed groups. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head-On with Bob Kincaid. Head-On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head-On Radio Network.
Well, here it is Tuesday. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, your late afternoon, evening's confrontation with the facts and just the facts. I love having the news in front of the program because it gives us a little roadmap. You know, we heard roadmap this afternoon as Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert went to visit dear leader in the White House, and it does. It gives us a little roadmap for where we might be looking to go this evening. The meeting between and the little press conference between Dear Leader and Ehud Olmert was disturbing. It was quiet. Nobody took their shoes off and banged on the podium or anything, but it was disturbing. Because among other things, Dear Leader reiterated the fact that the United States will continue to allow Israel to dictate American foreign policy in the Middle East, and you know there was talk about Iran, of course, and the Palestinians, of course. But more than anything else, the idea. There was mention of the fact that Iran wants to let Israel cease to be, you know, that. And with that being the case, there are other, sure, Michael Hayden passed out of the Senate Intelligence Committee, at least until we get rid of the Republicans in the Senate, the majority at least. Can we stop calling it the Intelligence Committee? Because there is nothing intelligent about what they do over there. You know, Michael Hayden looks like some sort of a cartoon character. Brother. Anyway. There's something quietly terrifying in conversations between Ehud Olmert and George Bush. Because both, you get the idea that both of them would be willing to radiate the world for their own personal philosophical the enrichment or satisfaction satisfaction, yeah. And that just scares the daylights out of me, because I couldn't help thinking as I watched the press conference, if you could call it that. I mean, it was another dummied up, ginned up little dog and pony show. But. When they sit there and just quietly talk about things that are going to involve the deaths of thousands and of the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not named millions of human beings walking on the planet. I don't know about you, it makes my skin crawl. You know, I remember growing up in the Cold War days. I once had an English professor who had a research project going and wanted any of his students or anything who had, or anyone who had like nuclear Holocaust nightmares. He wanted to collect them and record them, just to see what the subconscious impact of the Cold War and the possibility that given a couple of stupid missteps, the world could be toast, you know, tomorrow. He was interested in that. And I thought, you know, remember the peace dividend? I thought that stuff went away, and I guess I'm a simpleton for that. But I did. I thought it went away. And, well, a couple of things. I know how it goes. The minute I say anything about the United States doing anything but marching lockstep to what Israel tells us to do in terms of Middle East foreign policy, then, all right, he's an anti-Semite. Yeah, that's bogus. That's hooey. That's words I won't say, the barnyard epithets, if you will. But the fact remains that why somebody explain to me why Israel is pushing this crap about Iran gonna nuke them. I mean, can we take a step back and just ask a simple question? And that question is, who in their right mind would use nuclear weapons for a first strike? I know the United States. We did. But I'm talking about in a nuclear armed world where we got them, they got them, somebody else has got them, crazy religious fanatics in Pakistan got them. Who in their right mind? What nation in its right mind would use nuclear weapons for a first strike? What nation would develop nuclear weapons for anything other than a self-defense deterrent? Over the last few years, we've seen what happens. Iraq, no nuclear program. Hey, come on down. You get a war. North Korea, nuclear weapons. The President Chickenhawk, he's going to be real careful with President Kim Jong-whack, or the dude with the platform shoes and the nuclear arsenal. We have taught lessons here. We have taught small countries that if they do not wish to be invaded by us, they would be well advised to develop a nuclear program so that we will be afraid of them, and to act just a little bit crazy so we can't be absolutely certain that they wouldn't use them for a first strike. Honest to God. The president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, whatever. This guy is an engineer, okay? He's a professor of engineering or some such. And as such, you know, he's had to maintain something on the order of a rational mind in order to learn the engineering stuff. They're not in... Oh, boy, we're dealing with religious people. The inclination is to say they're not insane. Maybe they are. Maybe they think that if they launch a first strike against the great Satan, then... what? Then some religious prophet, Mahdi, whatever, comes down and makes it all frisbees and falafel. I don't know. We're dealing with religious people. Crazy. But honest to God, is there anybody out there with a rational mind who thinks that Iran would use nuclear weapons as a first strike. You know, stepping okay, they're religiously insane. That being the case, why would they therefore, you know, Israel ain't real big. You nuke Tel Aviv, you're going to get Jerusalem. You know, just in the backwash. Jerusalem is what, the third holiest city in Islam? They're going to make it so that nobody can ever throw a rug down at the Al-Aqsa Mosque ever again and, you know, see the big rock or the Golden Dome or whatever. Golden Dome, Golden Arches. They're going to do that? No, I can't see that. Especially understanding that, you know, if any country that uses nuclear weapons as a first strike is immediately going to get the rest of the world to go, yep, they're it. Roast them, toast them, make glass out of them. Let's see it glow. So when I hear these quiet speeches about how threatened Israel feels by Iran, you know, and their leader was a man who, they've got as a president, a man who denounced the Holocaust. And so what? Rational people know the Holocaust happened. The only people who say the Holocaust didn't happen are like Klansmen and the government of Iran and the white supremacists and other Bush voters, okay? Now, there isn't, you know, the religious fundamentalists of the Bush who follow Bush, you know, they think about the Holocaust and think, cool. Now, that was wrong to do it then, but if Jesus comes back, we can do it all over again. It's going to be fun because we're going to watch him confess Christ. So, I don't know. My sense for fraud, just the little hairs on the back of my neck were all standing up watching these two people quietly discuss the destruction of Earth. Because everyone knows the United States has no bigger friend than the nation of Israel. Really? That was our best friend that... rocket attacked the USS Liberty, 1968? 72? Something like that? We covered it up? God almighty. These people scare the crap out of me, and that's just the beginning tonight. That's just the beginning. A little follow-up, you know, toward the end of the show last night, I was talking about the rise in prison population in the United States. A little follow-up to that. Later on this evening. A little follow-up to the stolen veterans data. Yeah, that's fun. And something that I should probably save for tomorrow night's prayer meeting edition, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to just keep it to myself that long. That's all coming. The phone number, if you want to jump in and add something of your own, is 877, the number 4, head-on, 877-443-2366. Email's easy, too, bob@headonradio.com. We'll go any direction you want to go when we come back. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website over at progressive.org. Leave it up to Bush's FTC to deny price gouging on the part of big oil. The FTC says it's just plain old supply and demand. Problem is, the textbook free marketplace doesn't exist in the oil industry. Right now, the top five oil refining companies, including ExxonMobil and Shell, control more than 50% of the refining market. And ExxonMobil and Shell and Chevron Texaco and ConocoPhillips, they not only refine the oil, they drill it, they pipe it, and they retail it. They're as vertically integrated as they come. And this gives them enormous power to set artificially high prices. Are we, consumers, really to sit here and believe that after Katrina or during the spring, the oil companies, out of the kindness of their hearts, let the prices adjust freely? Come on. There's no such thing as a freely adjusted price in such an oligopolistic market. This is what happens when the government stops regulating business and fails to enforce the antitrust laws of the land. You get a handful of huge companies that gouge consumers and make obscene profits along the way. ExxonMobil alone made $36 billion last year. Gas prices are up. And don't be telling me, that's all on the up and up. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Sure, you got a cool motorcycle. You're a regular hero. Have a beer, and you'll go from hero to zero. Skip the alcohol. Ride straight. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much.
Welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Straight to the phones. David is joining us from Maine, where spring has finally gotten there, hasn't it, David?
I would say so, Bob. I would say so. Good evening to you, and how are you doing this evening?
Doing quite well.
That's good to hear. Yeah, I want to start out with something that I don't think anyone's talking about, and I think we should. Dave Von Kleist, who did In Plain Sight, was on the Glenn Beck program last week. I urge everyone to watch it, because this is the first time CNN has actually had a confrontational type of interview. But I like the way Dave Von Kleist handled himself, because he said, I'm not prescribing to any theory. I'm just telling you. He wanted to know where the other footage was. And Glenn, I have to handle it to Glenn. Glenn was moderately rude. So he was in the...
As opposed to completely, utterly, unforgivably rude?
No, he's moderately rude. He called him a nutcase at the end, like he thought that was funny or something. And here's a guy spending his time and whatnot trying to explain to him he doesn't have a position on the whole thing. I think Kleist is the most reasonable out of everybody out of most people in the 9/11 theorists. He doesn't subscribe to the missile. He doesn't subscribe to anything. He just says, hey, where's the Sheraton footage? Where's the other camera footage? That's all we want to know.
Yeah. And see, that is beneficial, David. I full disclosure.
There's really no answer that you can give to, like, well, we don't have it, or, I mean, there's obviously a stall here somewhere, and I hope Judicial Watch doesn't stop, because if they stop, they're pansies. They're pansies. I respect them that they got the 7-second blurry, I'm at a gas station and I just saw a Dodge pickup go by or something, but that's about it. Or you know what? It reminds me of like a Chevy Chase's Funny Farm where you don't see the mailman.
Yeah.
He just throws the mail.
Cue the deer.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And you know, there are some parallels here, because Chevy Chase is infamously rude, and so is Bush. But anyway.
Yeah, okay.
The second thing I wanted to mention was this story that I don't think anyone's talking about just got on the radar, is U.S. sets up $405 million Russian-Afghan arms deal.
Saw that.
Oh, you saw this?
Yeah, I had it in last night's stack, didn't get to it.
Right.
But yeah, the notion that this is... And, well, I don't know if you're reading the same story I read, but it's all predicated on the fact that the Bush administration is doing this on the possibility that a Democrat might take control of the Democrats might take control of Congress, or a Democrat might get the White House in 2008, and therefore, you know, we've got to arm the Iraqis or the Afghans or whom the hell ever to the teeth
I think that's part of it, but the other part of it, I think they're nutcases, but anyway.
Well, that goes without saying. I mean, we're talking about an administration that's run by Boris Badenov, okay?
And I thought Ellen Radner from the talk radio show on the Tom Hartman show something of interesting. She said that the veteran story, to her sources, or to what she was told, was held back 3 weeks. So we've known, so they've known about this for 3 weeks.
Yeah, CNN's even confirming that now. 19 yeah. days.
I really don't know what to say at that point, except that there's something definitely not right in the waters at this minute. And what was the other thing I was going to mention? I was going to mention the war. Oh, shoot. I'm drawing a blank here.
That's okay. Don't sweat it. Well, you know, picking up to what you said about Glenn Beck, I mean, we all recognize he's a freak, okay?
Right.
He's an absolute utter. He's trying to tone it down a little bit for the TV audience. I saw a few minutes of him. I guess it was on a rerun or something, maybe late Friday night. It was just awful.
Right.
But this is a network that gives time to Nancy Grace, that gives time to William Let's Abort All the Black Babies Bennett. They're trying to outfox Fox.
Right. Well, this was a breakthrough because I've never seen Dave Don Kleist anywhere near CNN building. And I just thought that was interesting. And the other thing, it just came back to me. The other thing I want to mention was, did you check out the Mike Stark page?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. It was quite interesting.
Pretty impressive, huh? Did you see who we got today?
No, I haven't been there since.
He got to talk to Tim Russert on the Hannity show.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this guy is the one to watch. I mean, he would be good for like a weekly mosaic show of all the conservatives and whatnot, and all the calls he made, like 2-hour show or something.
Well, I'll touch base with him. I mean, that's the purpose of what we're doing here, is to develop a liberal or a progressive,
right.
Stable of talk.
I agree with you.
You know, if we can help him get more exposure, and he, you know, it's one thing to sit and record; it's another thing to go live. You know,
right?
They're wildly different animals, as anybody who's ever done it can tell you. But you know, I liked his work.
I'm sure he could do editing and record all that all at once if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he could like send it to you. I mean, he seems to just have the drive right there. I just look at his stuff and I say, wow, you know, this guy. He needs to be on the network. Like, I mean, just the fact that he does one every day for 5 days a week and calls on these shows and spends like God knows how many hours each day listening.
Well, it would drive me insane. I go out, drive around, and I get 5 or 10 minutes of these people, and I'm wanting to put my head through the windshield.
Right. Oh yeah, and the other thing I want to mention, I keep forgetting about it, but now I know is you saw the footage of that Russian jet, right?
Yeah, I did.
Pretty amazing, huh?
That was amazing. A couple of my more aeronautically inclined buddies said that there were some inherent issues with regard to it, the instability of systems and things like that, that you know, probably involving math that I don't understand. But
right.
Just as a video spectacle, my God, it was fascinating.
I know. I mean, I don't even know why we want to mess with that country, to tell you the truth. If their planes can do somersaults in the air, what are we thinking?
Well, you know, there's that, and you know why? But David, the overarching question is,
yeah.
Why do we feel like we got to mess with anybody?
That's true too. But I think it's, you know, I mean, I really have to say this, Bob, and I think I say it in all honesty. If the liberal force was in power, we would have the same issues with if to go to war, not to war, to attack who, because the consultants would come in and they would try to wire us like some out of control warmonger Frankenstein and just rev us up. I mean, that's just the nature of.
There's truth in that, David, because I mean the war on Serbia stands out in stark relief. The fact that. It was wrong. You know, we bombed civilian targets in Serbia in order to try to save the Kosovars. Now, what was going on in Kosovo was wrong.
Right, and that was the nice Republican administration.
Clinton, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's why I call him the Republican. I don't even, this is the radical rogue administration right here. I mean, think about it. Think about it.
But
I mean,
there's always going to be an element. There's always going to be an element, David,
right,
that wants to kill stuff and blow stuff up because we can.
I agree with you. I think the problem is that we just need to continue to address it, and we have to look at this like a board of chess and a board of risk all at once and realize that everything that we do, there are going to be drawbacks to the situation we make. But at the end of the day, you want to keep as less civilian casualties as possible. And I don't think this administration is even coming close to what they could be doing for...
Amnesty International released a report today, David.
Yeah.
Regarding the so-called independent contractors, you know, what have been called in English for several centuries now, mercenaries,
right,
and just says that it's our credibility, our decency has all just gone through the floor. We cannot be respected. We can't be trusted. Nothing.
Here's one for you. You know the conservatives' famous photo of the guy smoking a cigarette.
Yes.
The guy with the paint on his face and whatnot, the charred, whatever.
So, yeah, the Marlboro man.
Yeah, the Marlboro man. Guess what? He's anti-war.
Yeah, he's come out and he's a wreck, too.
Right.
He's one of those shattered people that Bruce was talking about, you know, up to his neck in PTSD, getting no services, home, and, you know, well, you know, welcome back from the war, son, forget you.
They should give him royalty checks for how many times they show this on the blogs and the magazines and everything.
No, yeah, he's a hero to the war lovers. David, we're at our bottom break. It's always good to talk to you.
All right, Bob. I'll talk to you later.
All right, take care.
Have a good one. Bye.
All right, bye. That's a good start toward the evening. Lots of good topics brought to bear. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. When we come back, a little follow-up to... Our people
in. If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A warning shot has been fired over the bow of 9 acute care hospitals in New Jersey by 10,000 nurses. Represented by the Health Professional and Allied Employees Union, the nurses are specifically concerned about staffing levels and retirement security. Last week, the union issued a 2-week warning that if contract agreements aren't reached by June 1st, the nurses and other health professionals will walk off the job. The union is currently bargaining with multiple hospitals at the same time, part of a strategy that asserts that they will have more leverage by combining numbers. The union is also concerned about a recent ruling by the National Labor Relations Board that could allow hospitals to categorize certain registered nurses as supervisors, thereby depriving them of union representation. The New Jersey Hospital Association is taking a wait-and-see approach. They said if it appears simultaneous strikes are inevitable, they will then step in to make sure appropriate steps are taken for patient safety.
Samir Adil is president of the Iraqi Freedom Congress, which he describes as an umbrella group encompassing the Iraqi labor, student, and women's movements. Adil says that the American invasion and occupation plunged 5 million people into poverty, virtually destroyed education, and has led to a sectarian war that's burning Iraqi society. The IFC wants an immediate end to the U.S. occupation as it works to build worker power and a secular government providing equality for all.
If you visit Iraq, it's like a jungle. By $100, you can kill anybody.
Adil says that U.S. troops are not protecting the Iraqi people and should leave at once.
We've never seen any American troops there on the street guarding the streets, guarding the people. We've never seen them. They are in the outskirts of the cities, watching everyone, and they say, well, oh, you know what, this is an Iraqi issue, we're not going to intervene. So if you're not going to intervene, so you're going out, or if you're pulling out, it's not going to affect us. I mean, the American policy there is to protect the government in place. The appointed is not to protect the laborers, not to protect the ordinary people there.
This morning marked day 88 for the more than 2,400 workers who have been locked out by AK Steel. Company Chairman James L. Wainscott said on Friday that the company will continue to operate its Middletown Works plant with temporary non-union workers. Here is today's economic report. 6 years into the new century, it appears the glass ceiling is still holding up. Consulting firm Accenture released a study on Wednesday as part of International Women's Day. The study revealed that 70% of women and 57% of men still see a barrier preventing women from getting ahead in business. The study interviewed 1,200 executives in 8 countries, including the United States, Australia, and the Philippines.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Great 1980s anthem, Nena. 99 Luftballons. I could have just listened to that. But let's not. No, I mentioned something. Or I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way. I have no idea what happened with the out of that last break. Sorry. You know, when you dance on the cutting edge of technology, sometimes you get cut. I got cut. Oh, well. Still pretty cool. If you want to get involved in tonight's show, it's, well, this afternoon's, you know, the longer days mess with me. The number is 866. No, it's not. 877-443-2366. There we go. 877-443-2366. Agnes, quit that. Sitting here messaging me in production chat. 6666. 877-443-2366. That's 877, the number 4, head on. Easy, huh? Sure. Last night we closed the program. Me and that mouse in my pocket. Last night I closed the program with a story about the rising numbers of incarcerated Americans. 1 in 156, 1 in 164, something like that. Are incarcerated, just warehoused, in jail, sorry, see ya, goodbye, go eat the vegetable oil cheese sandwiches for a while, and, you know. Well, there's a little follow-up that's worth talking about. This is from Truth Out, and it has nothing to do with Karl Rove, so I think we can probably take it to the bank. It's an essay or opinion piece or whatever by William Fisher, but there are some facts contained therein that should be horrifying to anybody who's interested in concepts of justice, social justice, Christian justice, Buddhist justice, any kind of justice, or mercy for that matter, because mercy has something to do with all of this. And it starts out and makes mention, as I did last night, of Flush Flembol. Now, our buddy Flush claims he had a back condition, a bad back, and it was just causing him terrible, terrible pain. But, of course, it's worth remembering that all the time he had this bad back, he was going to golf tournaments. Now, as a person who swings the occasional, and I mean badly, plays golf bad. Me, I play golf badly from time to time. And my back's in okay shape. But as a generally out of shape, carrying too much weight, 43-year-old pink dude, I can tell you that if I go out and walk 18 holes and, you know, take my customary 90 to 100 strokes, I'm going to be kind of sore at the end of the day. Now, even factoring in the golf cart, somebody needs to explain to me how Rush, with this terrible, god-awful, debilitating back condition that required him to take truly heroic amounts of opioids, was able to play golf. Well, of course, the answer is that nasty right-wing thug had no back condition. There was no back condition. He's stinking rich, and there's not much more he can do to get a what? To get a jolt out of his existence. He's not very smart. He has excelled far above any expectation anyone ever had for little Rusty Limbaugh back when he was dodging the Vietnam War with that suppurating pustule on his hind end. You, I know, you. Yeah, he's on loan from God. Margin call. But when you're like that, you get to the point where you'll do anything just to stop being bored with yourself. Now, I can't imagine it. You know, you cut me loose with $25 million a year. I'm gonna have some fun with my existence. But, you know, what I'm getting at here, you know, this guy was caught doctor shopping. His assistant, his maid, whatever, you know, gave sworn depositions or sworn statements to law enforcement officials that she was going out with cigar boxes full of money and coming home with cigar boxes full of street opioids. All right? As long as he behaves himself for, 18 months and doesn't get whacked again on whatever, it's as though he was never charged with a crime. Now, all of that is, you know, what's past is prologue. All of that contrasts with a man named Richard Payee. Richard Payee is in a wheelchair. All right? Wait for it. Richard Payee is in a wheelchair. Richard Payee has multiple sclerosis. He was charged in Florida with doctor shopping. In other words, obtaining prescriptions to ease unbearable pain. The mandatory minimum for doctor shopping in the state of Florida, because they have mandatory minimums because they can't trust the liberal judges to exercise mercy. Mandatory minimum sentencing is one of the most hateful things that has ever come to be in the American judiciary system. The mandatory minimum on doctor shopping in Florida is 25 years. Richard Payee has multiple sclerosis, hellish, horrifying pain. He is in a wheelchair, and in the Florida correctional system, he is in prison for 25 years for doing exactly what Flush Flemball did. Only this guy had a reason. Can you just get your head around that? 25 years. I'm not going to yell. I'm not going to scream. I'd like to. But what's the point? This man got a death sentence. He will die in prison, Richard Payee. He will die in prison. And in prison, the state of Florida is providing him with a morphine pump. Are you processing all of this? Is it just me, or is this a heinous miscarriage of justice? No, it's a heinous miscarriage of justice because the American criminal law system is set. You know, the criminal law system in the United States is mostly the three M's, moron management and money. A mandatory minimum sentence. He has to serve the 25 years. How could you possibly be a judge in Florida? How could anybody with any morals be a judge in the state of Florida? And I don't ask that lightly. Judges are asked to do, in the name of the law, heinous, hateful things. Whoever sentenced this man to 25 years for collecting drugs to deal with his multiple sclerosis, how could you put that man in prison? Well, see, the thing is that's how the gig works. If you don't do what the law says, they'll come get you. So instead of looking at this and looking at the law and saying, this is insane, this is crazy, I'm a circuit judge, overturn me, whatever, do what you want, I ain't sending this guy to prison. This guy blithely sentenced a man to prison for 25 years for obtaining, for going from one doctor to another. See, that's the thing with Limbaugh. I always said, I think drug crimes are stupid laws. I think our drug laws are stupid laws. They create more problems, and by definition, they create more problems than they solve because they solve no problems. Richard Payee, 25 years, and then. The article by William Fisher goes on to mention another man, Dr. Michael Jackson. Dr. Michael Jackson's a board-certified pain management specialist. He deals with the Richard Payees of the world and tries to manage their misery. Dr. Michael Jackson was sentenced to 25 years in prison for violating the Controlled Substances Act. There's a philosophical core to this, like the core of a boil, or the tumorous nub of a cancer that metastasizes all over a body. There's a philosophical core to this that is poisoning our nation. On the one hand, you've got Richard Payee in prison for 25 years for trying to ease his own pain. You've got young African American men who, if caught with X amount of rock crack, go to prison for like 10 times as long as a white male of the same age who gets caught with powder cocaine. You got people in prison, but wait, it's not just that. This same thing, this violating the Controlled Substances Act, has everything in the world. It's the same thing as what goes on in the abortion debate, all right? It's the same damn thing. Some overzealous, rule-oriented, anal-retentive little dude who never so much as drank a beer in college so he could get into the DEA has no more business making medical decisions for the otherwise honest, law-abiding Americans than some religion industry freak does making decisions about what goes on inside a woman's body or doesn't. But in both instances, you have, and see, these are easy issues for sleazy little politicians. They go home and, well, you know, I voted to send drug users to prison on a mandatory minimum. Hey, Jesus, speak to me for 25 years. I am godly. I am hard on drugs. I'm tough on crime. You must send me back to the state house or the Capitol because I'm hard on crime. I'm tough on drugs. I'm a law and order kind of guy. And 2 weeks later, there's a fundraiser, and he goes, and I believe in the holy words of Christ Jesus, who said, yea, verily, let it be unto men to control the insides of the women's. I'm tough on them liberals. Them liberals and the liberal judges, they're going to make sure that everybody gets a free abortion certificate inside their post-toasties if you don't send me back to the legislature. It's the same thing. When you allow government to make medical decisions, you wind up with Richard Payee in prison for 25 years on a mandatory minimum when the guy at best should have been given probation and some counseling and sent to NA, for God's sakes. Michael Jackson was sentenced to 25 years himself, Dr. Michael Jackson, for over-prescribing opioids. And he remarks Jackson was charged in June 2001 with manslaughter, over-prescribing of opioids, prescribing opioids without a legitimate medical reason, and prescribing the drugs to patients with whom he had no legitimate doctor-patient relationship. They revoked his DEA registration, which meant he could no longer prescribe medication, which means they put him out of business. Before he was ever convicted. The DEA, do you realize that? Do you realize that your physician stands in abject terror of the Drug Enforcement Administration? Do you realize that the DEA has jurisdiction over whether or not that guy writes a prescription for damned antibiotics? Let's go back to August 2001. When Cheney and Ashcroft and Dear Leader, we're all taking Cipro. Before there was ever even a threat. That was an unnecessary prescription, wasn't it? And do you remember how a lot of people were saying, well, maybe we'd better be taking Cipro too? And no, you can't have it. That would be over-prescribing. And CNN and Fox and ABC and CBS and NBC all had stories about, oh, well, you know, the president's taking Cipro because it's a prophylactic. And if you went to your doctor and said, I want Cipro, your doctor said, are you crazy? The DEA will nail my hide to the wall if I start writing Cipro. Because they would. Because it threatened the supply. And now, because of this, and I've seen it time after time after time after time. People suffer. real pain. I'm not talking about the pain of just being filthy rich and not having any idea what to do with it like Rush Limbaugh had. You know, there's only so many testimonial dinners you can go to where the polyester crowd stands up and says, "You're our Jesus, Rush." The ennui of being rich and bored. I'm not talking about that pain. I'm talking about the agony of a Richard Pagey. The agony of people with, you know, those fun little diseases that are sort of throwaway diagnoses when you hurt and you hurt and you hurt and nothing can do anything about your pain. They say, "Well, you ain't got cancer. Yeah, you don't have anything else. But I hurt." Well, okay. Here's an antidepressant. It's not psychic pain. Dionne Warwick can't help. Yeah, here, have some Tylenol. Go roast your liver. That's what you get in America now. You get doctors who look at my dad and me and say, "Well, you know, if you want that kind of pain medication, you're going to have to get another doctor." When you let government make healthcare decisions, when you let law enforcement make healthcare decision, it shall hereby be a crime for a woman to have an abortion. That's a law enforcement decision. It's not government. That's law enforcement. That's the cops. When you let the cops decide what the doctor can do, you're going to have bad cases like Richard Pagey and Michael Jackson. Oh, by the way, he was charged with manslaughter. He's still in prison, Dr. Jackson is. He's still in prison. They put him away for 25 years, but finally on the appeal, the prosecution finally admitted that the people who died of the overdoses weren't even his patients. What did I say? What do we call it? The punishment fetish. This is the American punishment fetish writ large. The only thing is, we only punish our poor. We don't punish Rush Limbaugh. We don't punish we do punish Daryl Strawberry. We don't punish Noel Bush. No. No. We punish a dude in a wheelchair. Because we're righteous. Because we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. And we're good. And Jesus loves us best. So there's a lot to fix. There's a lot of good reasons for getting rid of a Republican majority anywhere it exists. One of the best of those reasons is that when you do that, maybe you take a little tiny baby step toward getting rid of the people who are so sick and so twisted and so psychotic that the only way they can measure their own human worth is in reducing the human worth of another person. And that is reason enough for me. Me? Who am I? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio.
I was born an original sinner. I was born from original sin. And if I had a dollar bill for all the things I've done, there'd be a mountain of money piled up to my chin. Mama.
Head-On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Air Force General Michael Hayden's nomination as CIA director won the endorsement of the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday in a vote that sets the final stage for formal confirmation by the full Senate later this week. The 15-member committee, which Republicans control by a single vote, approved Hayden's nomination 12-3 after an hour-long closed-door discussion. A new Zogby poll indicates that nearly half of the American public believes, quote, that so many unanswered questions about 9/11 remain that Congress or an international tribunal should reinvestigate the attacks, including whether any U.S. government officials consciously allowed or helped facilitate their success, end quote. The survey was of 1,200 adults via telephone. The Federal Communications Commission has told a Democratic congressman that they cannot investigate the National Security Agency's domestic data mining program because it's classified. In a letter to Massachusetts Democrat Ed Markey, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin said the program could not be scrutinized because it was classified. In a new audio tape allegedly made by Osama bin Laden, the al-Qaeda leader says Zacharias Moussaoui had no connection to the September 11th attacks on the United States. This statement surfaced on a website today. Prosecutors at the court-martial of an Army dog handler said Tuesday he was part of a crew of corrupt soldiers who enjoyed tormenting detainees at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Major Matthew Miller said in his opening statement that Sergeant Santos A. Cardona harassed prisoners for, quote, nothing more than the entertainment of the accused and the enjoyment of the other corrupt cops serving on the night shift at Abu Ghraib, end quote. Cardona is accused of letting his tan Belgian shepherd bite detainee Mohamed Bolendia on the leg badly enough to require stitches, according to the charge sheets and investigators' reports. Of the 100 U.S. senators, Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania, and Hillary Clinton, Democrat of New York, have accepted the most from lobbyists this election cycle, according to a report released today by the group Public Citizen. The report examines donations by the 50 biggest donors on the Hill. Santorum topped the list of those who have benefited most from lobby gifts, raking in a whopping $560,738. Clinton, on the second biggest recipient, trails Santorum by over 25%, having taken $417,575 from lobbyists and political action committees. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy!
Come on!
Who helped you?
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
The ACLU of North Carolina is asking for information on the Greensboro Police Department's surveillance of political groups. The request, submitted May 15th, stemmed from a clash between police and protesters at a downtown rally against President Bush in January. It was submitted on behalf of the World Can't Wait NC, which organized the rally, and five protesters. The ACLU is asking for all surveillance records on the World Can't Wait NC and the protesters, as well as police guidelines for surveillance. A year after combat soldiers leave Iraq, those with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder say they are in worse physical health, suffer more pain, and are more likely to miss work than veterans without PTSD symptoms, according to a military study out Monday. The anonymous survey of nearly 3,000 Iraq veterans is the first to look at a link between PTSD and physical symptoms. It was released at the American Psychiatric Association meeting in Toronto. In the survey, about 17% of the soldiers had PTSD symptoms. Compared with those without stress symptoms, they were much more likely to report all kinds of pain, from headaches to backaches and gastrointestinal complaints such as nausea and indigestion. The House voted Tuesday to further choke off the flow of U.S. aid to the Hamas-controlled Palestinian Authority, drawing the displeasure of the Bush administration and dividing the pro-Israel lobbying community. The measure, approved 361-37, would cut off aid to non-governmental groups working in the West Bank and Gaza, except for health programs, and would deny visas to members of the Palestinian Authority. Acts of violence have killed nearly 2,500 people and forced more than 85,000 to flee their homes in Iraq, the UN Assistance Mission in Iraq said Tuesday in a March-April report on the human rights situation. The fatality count was comprised by death certificates issued by the Baghdad morgue, the report said. The Medico-Legal Institute in Baghdad issued 1,294 death certificates in March and 1,155 in April, the majority of which had been deaths caused by gunshot wounds, it said. As a result of the pervasive violence, Iraqis continue to leave their areas of resistance either voluntarily or as a result of violence or threats by insurgents, militias, and other armed groups. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head-On with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, then, 6 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid as we cruise into this Tuesday evening. I wanted to go back to another thing from last night. This business with these disgusting, hateful commercials that are going to be running in, Albany, New York, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Anchorage, Alaska, Austin, Texas, Charleston, West Virginia, Dallas, Dayton, Ohio, Denver, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Phoenix, Sacramento, and Santa Barbara, California, Springfield, Illinois, and Washington, D.C. And what you remember, a little girl blows away dandelion fluff, and an announcer says, "Carbon dioxide. They call it pollution. We call it life." Aimed at fostered among other people by the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Now, these are a bunch of pro-business weirdos who think that, you've heard it from George Bush from time to time, dear leader, voluntary compliance, because industry has to live here too, and they will voluntarily comply with pollution rules if we will just give them the chance to voluntarily comply. And so, you know, the CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, they're a bunch of the gang of sleazebuckets who promote all the pollution the earth can tolerate and say, the head creep of CEI is a guy named Fred Smith. He's the president. And among other things, you know, he's against mandatory curbs on carbon dioxide. My God, man, if we didn't have carbon dioxide, do you realize your Coca-Cola would be flat? Carbon dioxide is good. That's all it is. That's CO2. That's gasified CO2. The things you think are warming the planet give fizz to your soda pop. Communist. No, he was talking about Al Gore. He said, "There's a lot of pictures of Al Gore pensively looking into the sunset. I don't think he's running for president, but he might be running for arch druid." Ha, 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 ha. Oh, that's a real knee slapper, arch druid. No. Yeah, he said that. And they're running this because next week is the theatrical release of An Inconvenient Truth. It's being put forward as, you know, Al Gore's movie. You know, this is the movie George Bush said he wouldn't see. You know, Al Gore, Al's a nice guy. He came out and he said, George doesn't have to go out to the theater. I'll come there and I'll show the movie to him. You know, if Mohammed cannot come to the mountain, then the mountain will come to Mohammed. But dear leader doesn't want to see An Inconvenient Truth because it is inconvenient. You know, I've got a solution. In 2005, there was 140 cubic, not square, cubic, you know, the three-dimensional measurement, 140 cubic miles. Wrap your noggin around that. 140 cubic miles of overall ice mass lost from the Greenland ice sheet. Now, that's enough. Now, the report comes from the Telegraph over in the UK, so they're going to use a local reference. But that's enough to fill Loch Ness 70 times over, and that's 1 year, just 1 year. 140 cubic miles of ice mass was lost from Greenland. I got an idea. Oh, I'm going to be mean again. I got an idea. Let's take Fred Smith, that knee-slapping comedian arch-druid. that was a funny one. And let's just, let's relocate the Competitive Enterprise Institute to Greenland. So, you know, and all the global warming deniers, Greenland, go. And we'll see you in, 20 years. And you can tell us what a bunch of phony carbon dioxide. They call it pollution, but we call it life. Some other fun facts for you. That the Competitive Enterprise Institute isn't much interested in. Air temperature in the Arctic has increased on average by 5 degrees over the last 100 years. You know, 5 degrees, that's not much. Nah, hell, there's nothing. 5 degrees. But you know what? When that's the difference between 28 degrees Fahrenheit and 32 degrees Fahrenheit, or 33 degrees Fahrenheit, that's a lot. That's the difference between freezing and thawing. The increase in ice loss from the Greenland ice sheet since 1996. Greenland ice sheet. Got to say that carefully. The increase in ice loss from the Greenland ice sheet since 1996. We're talking about 10 years. 60%. 60%. Now, not if, but when the Greenland ice sheet melts, what does that mean? Why was it cruel of me to suggest that we take Mr. Fred Smith and all of his pals at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and put him in Greenland? Well, when the Greenland ice sheet melts, the oceans rise 22 feet. You know, because if you've ever heard Flush Flimball talking about, my friends, this is just a big myth. All this business about melting ice. After all, you know, when you've got ice cubes floating in water and the ice melts, the water level doesn't increase. No, stupid, but it does when you drop the ice cube in. 22 feet of seawater rise when the Greenland ice sheet melts. You lose Holland, the Netherlands. You lose Florida. You lose Bangladesh. And most of London. Now, what are the chances of losing the Greenland ice sheet? Since 1988, the number of years that have been the hottest on record, 10. 10 out of the last 18 years have been the hottest years on record. Well, we've got a break coming up. One last thing. The world's economies would be It would cost $150 billion to the world economy to fully implement the Kyoto Agreement. We do that in 9 months in Iraq. Dear heavenly days. I think I'm going to go drop me some ice cubes and a glass of iced tea or something and take a break. You're welcome to jump in on this. What do you think of that? Can we put the Competitive Enterprise Institute and maybe the people who hate the windmills too? Let's move them to Greenland. Wouldn't want to mess up their view scale. What do you think? Jump right in. 877-4 head on 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. With my bioreactor, feed me biogrub. Stream it out to the bioweb. It's my dream, I'm the bicep boy. Well, it's not a lake, it's an old rock quarry. I won't see much, but I don't worry. My bike gives me light, so I think it's day. Oh, yeah, my bicep, I can't wait. Well, let's be honest, it's just a pit. And I'll be sitting in the bottom of it. I don't know how long I'll stay. Maybe till the fish say go away.
Kincaid. We didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. And we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Oh, wow, that must have been the bumper music. Okay, welcome back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Just in case you were wondering, just to finish up the little business about carbon dioxide, we call it life. I mentioned that $150 billion figure. That's how much it would cost to the economy to implement Kyoto. Bear in mind, the benefits of that won't be felt for 100 years. It's just going to keep getting worse for about 100 years if we implemented Kyoto. If we don't, we all get to die. Everybody dies. And finally, the amount of Arctic ice that will be left during the summer months within 80 years. Zero. Zero. And I think we can all agree that the Arctic ice caps are somewhat important. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm quite well. Yourself?
Reasonably well. Reasonably well. Just a few comments about some of the things that you mentioned earlier. First is about nuclear war, over in the Middle East between Iran and Israel.
Sure.
I think both those nations are just access looking for a place to happen. But I think probably one scenario that you might envision or consider would be a rogue element on one side doing something crazy and starting it and dragging people into it. That's the way a lot of fights start. Somebody makes some provocative action or runs away with a loose nuke, and that kind of just is a little pebble that's loose as it starts the avalanche. That's my take on it right there.
You mean some extra governmental type someone?
Yeah.
Using one?
Yeah. Generally, I think that's probably what will happen. I mean, it may happen. I would certainly give it credence and, take it seriously, because that's generally the way things like this do happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and I think that begs...
Start something like that, because, it's just going to have a multiplier effect.
Well, the question, though, that's begged out of that scenario, Jim, is... Who's more likely to do that?
I don't know. Israel basically is on definitely on a war foot stance, and Iran is, as much as they possibly can be, would be. I mean, because each nation does not trust the other, and they both have a historical enmity towards one another. We know this. And so
we also know, Jim, do we not, that these devices and the fissile materials, the fissionable materials that can be used, that are used in them, are traceable.
Oh,
they have fingerprints.
That. Oh, I know that. I mean, like I say, I mean, they can go where a bomb explodes, and they can tell you which company made it and where it came from. They can trace it down. If it was made over here, or if it's made wherever, in Russia, or, they could trace it down, sure. Of course they can. But, that's kind of, if one of them goes off, the damage will be done. Let's hope there's somebody left around to trace it, because it may have, like I say, the effect of, a bunch of ping pong balls on rat traps, and to throw one ping pong ball in the room and watch them go off, World's pretty charged up place this day and age, my friend.
Well, it is, but what scares me,
the vials of rats are filled.
Jim, and I know, and presumably Iran knows that the materials could be traced. So if they quietly, gave a suitcase nuke to, Hamas or Hezbollah,
they wouldn't have anything to do with it. They wouldn't know it. I'm talking about a rogue element. That's what I'm talking about. We used to have more control over these weapons. Now, we don't have any control over a lot of them that have just disappeared. And on the black market, the Russian mafia is trying to get their hands on these things.
Well, there are some reports out there that say that they have.
Well, yeah, they tried to get a submarine to run cocaine. Some guy named, he's a Russian Jewish guy who was, they call him Tarzan. And, you know, he was one of the ones that Brezhnev let go during the time when they were getting rid of all those Jews and sent them to Israel. And most of them to Brighton Beach or Miami and formed the nucleus of the worst mafia in the history of any mafia organization there is. The Italians scared to death of them. I mean, hell, the Russian mafia, they won't kill you. They'll kill your family, too. But that's just getting far afield. I mean, I'm just saying that...
Well, no, it's really not that far afield, because one of the things that we have to worry about, you remember the name A.Q. Khan, don't you, Jim?
Oh, yeah, the Pakistani guy who helped everybody out was going to help Gaddafi out. He's a hero over there because he's like their... He's kind of sort of to them what Mr...
Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer was to Los Alamos back in New Mexico. Sure, I sure do. A.Q. Khan, he's got a beautiful house and everything, Kensington Garden, and he's just Dr. Feelgood for those people, you know?
Yeah, and he was a nuclear Walmart for every little country that wanted to bomb over there.
Oh, yeah, he was sending plans out every way he possibly could. It was, I mean, if he had to put them in a roll of toilet paper, he'd send them out like that. You know, he would, sure would, absolutely. But like I say, there's still weapons that are left over from the Soviet Union that are unaccounted for. And, there's always a possibility of somebody who doesn't have anything to do with Iran or Israel or the United States just starting something for whatever reason. You know, you never can tell. You know, I guess you have to be a little Tom Clancy to think about some of this stuff. You know what
I mean? Well, no, I do understand that, Jim, but the that still begs the question. The Iranians themselves, they're doing the Bush administration, the Israelis are doing everything within their power to try to get the world scared to death of the Iranians. The North Koreans already have them.
Well, I know that, but I mean, they don't want Iran to have that because of Iran's position vis-a-vis Israel. And let's face it, our relations with Iran, I mean, have been terrible. I mean, look what we did. Well, I mean, we installed horrible governments over them when we imposed the Shah over them, and Milosevic was killed. And, you know, they haven't forgotten that. And Iran is still very much upset with the United States. They've got a big HO for us, and they have a right to have one because we have interfered in their affairs and have imposed governments that have been extremely oppressive and repressive. And, you know... But I'm saying that this present leader over there, he seems like he can be reasoned with and talked to. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I still think the greatest fear I have is for some rogue element that's going to really start something. That's all my say there is. You know, it's just I'm throwing that out. And as far as this global warming is concerned, I can tell you this. I mean, you go to Glacier National Park, and you're going to see more rocks than Glacier right now. And people don't think global warming is beginning to impact now. I mean, they have a piece of ice in Antarctica, I understand, the size of the country of France that's breaking off. I mean, they had one 2 years ago the size of Rhode Island that broke off. And, you know, that's a big old ice cube drops in the glass. Big one. And, of course, you know, when you have all that fresh water going into the ocean, it affects the salinity. And we talked about this before on the air, Bob, because, I mean, you know, that's going to impact on the Labrador Current and its ability to carry heat up to Europe and to England and to bathe the shores of that part of the world.
Right. The Labrador Current, the Gulf Stream, the Gulf Stream.
The Gulf Stream and the Labrador Current.
That's what makes Western Europe habitable.
Well, yeah, it basically gives it, in Britain, the coast, the climate, is what you call West Coast Marine. And that will change very quickly because the further you go into, Europe on the same latitude or parallel latitude, it gets much colder in the winter. Whereas in Britain, it's West Coast Marine, and that's the reason these countries are distant from the warmth of these shores, of these currents that that keep the temperature, you know, moderate. And that's going to be affected. And also it affects the northern states of this country, too.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you've got all kinds of movies out now. I mean, as far as the nuclear option, you've got that movie, The Sum of All Fears, which was pretty good. And as far as the ice cubes melting in the glass of the world, you've got that movie, The Day After Tomorrow, you know. so people mm-hmm. can pretty much turn on their DVDs and see what's going to happen. Possible.
Well, the thing is, a lot of, I mean, you know, Gore's documentary is coming out, Jim, and, you know, you've got these people at Competitive Enterprise Institute trying to say, CO2 is good for you. Yeah. There's a stiff competition for the attention of the American people, and frankly, I don't, you know, the people that are actually trying to make this place habitable, you know, 200 years from now, I don't know if they're getting the American ear.
Well, I don't know, because, you know, who has the money and who has the money to buy media time and to say that it's just a bunch of tree huggers and environmentalists, but I'm afraid when they began to see the climates of their countries change drastically and, you know, things happen, and all of a sudden places like D.C. and New York City and Miami and Charleston, South Carolina, Savannah, New Orleans, you know, become basically floodplains. And maybe it's going to take water lapping up on the stage of the Wall Street, of the steps of the Wall Street Stock Exchange for them to realize, oops.
Only problem is, Jim, by then it's too late. Thanks a lot, Jim. We've got to take our bottom of the hour break. It's time for our Cup of Joe report. But I appreciate what you bring, and you're right to bring up the idea of a rogue element with a nuclear weapon.
Well, that's what frightens me, because I mean, that's basically you have some very extreme people and people for selfish reasons who think they could profit by something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And there are all kinds of twisted minds out there, and if they get the wrong thing in their hands, God help us.
Well, and let's remember, not all twisted people are of Muslim extraction or Middle Eastern extraction. We had a pissed off American by the name of Timothy McVeigh, a good Bush, you know, a good Republican voter.
Well,
and
yeah,
look what we got out of that.
I mean, you have, or you could have some European who might be who might think he can have some gain from this, and
a Chechen, perhaps.
Well, whomever. You know, you just don't know. You just don't know. There's so many people out there today with so many mixed-up ideologies in their heads and so many ideas of what they think is their version of right or what they can, how they can benefit themselves. It's just hard to say. I mean, there are too many to even shake a stick at, to tell you the truth, Bob, in my opinion. I might be wrong.
No, you're absolutely right.
I think...
I'd like for you to, but unfortunately, I think, no, there's lots of crazies. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you for factoring in. Thank you.
All right. Have a wonderful evening. Bye now. And we will be back after tonight's report. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. You'd think that a story about the United States Attorney General saying on national television that he believes there's a precedent for putting journalists in jail who print stories about governmental lies and crimes would get a huge amount of coverage. But it goes to show how low we've sunk that you haven't heard a peep out of any of the major news outlets about this astonishing statement from an official who has the power to do exactly that. We all know from past experience that free speech to the current administration and its corporate backers means you're only free to report the lies they tell you. Reporting the truth, that is, the illegal activities of this government and who benefits from them, is forbidden. It used to be that they would only threaten journalists' careers. Now they're threatening them with jail time. All for telling people that their government is run by crooks and liars, backed up by even bigger crooks and liars. So their behavior, while reprehensible, is at least understandable. But no true journalist with any amount of self-respect should be willing to go along with this game. They have a serious responsibility to the public to keep us informed, and all too many have been neglecting it. And the reason to this observer is apparent. Big-name reporters make a lot of money for saying the right things. Saying the wrong things could make you wind up, well, like me, broke and concerned about the future. If it were up to me, these people wouldn't be jailed. They'd be booted out of the professional journalism business. But then again, some of them were never in it in the first place. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Tuesday evening. At least it's getting on. Oh, it's almost looking like night might fall sometime here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachian Mountains in northwest Alabama as I continue on remote, as we like to say. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we need to go do something at a car lot. Oh, there's a lot going on down here. That's what you say when you're on remote. There's a lot going on down here. Enough of that. Let's go straight to the phones. David, our good friend calling from Tennessee. Hey, David, you're head on.
Hello.
Howdy do.
Oh, my gracious. I'm on the air. And I was...
You are.
I was completely unprepared. It's Liberal David in the middle of Tennessee. And I think that may be as big a surprise to you as it was to me to be hearing that wonderful crunching sound, knowing I've made it to the air.
Oh, goodness. I was told you were online, so, you know,
Well, I was, but... Well, never mind how I got here. You know, as Will Rogers used to say regarding producing his birth certificate, most of us, when a man was standing in front of you, just kind of took his word for it that he'd been born.
You are on the air.
Just one crazy, massive outcomes later. An affirmation to that concept. One Sirhan had some sort of twisted Middle Eastern score to settle and killed what I believe might have been the best all-around president in the 20th century.
Bobby.
And that I sort of thought that might be possible then. And the more I read, the more I look, the more I study, I think he could have very well been that guy, because rather than the course others took, he got to sit on the bench for several years and mature and learn the game. And he had some epiphanies, not the least of which came in the tough hills and hollers of West Virginia when he became acquainted with an America he wasn't as knowledgeable of as he should have been.
Well, you know, I play that time machine game from time to time, David, and I wonder, what if Lee Harvey misses? What if somebody stops Sirhan?
Exactly.
And, you know, because so many of those things, you know, no Nixon.
Oh,
exactly. It was only because of the deaths of the two Kennedys that Richard Nixon was able to become president.
He would have been one of the most ugly, funny, who cares, laugh at him, warts on his nose footnote in the history of American politics, were it not for the death of those two men. I mean, he signed it.
And, you know, what follows on the heels of that? No Nixon, no Watergate. No Watergate, no Ford. Probably no Reagan.
Oh.
I mean, I guess for a younger generation, David, that inquiry, as they get more politically astute, will be, what if Sandra Day O'Connor hadn't decided that politics were more important than the health of the republic, and she hadn't given away the presidency to dear leader in December of 2000. You know, I'm convinced. You know, if it had truly been President Gore, I mean, that Saturday Night Live thing that we talked about last week. One of the things that didn't appear in that monologue was any reference and I've read several comments on this, and I have never seen this so far. But I think this was the most profound part and most serious part of that little comedy, that cold opener for Saturday Night Live 2 weeks ago, and that is there was no reference to Osama bin Laden. There was no reference to 9/11. And the fact of the matter is there was no reference to it because if Al Gore is president of the United States, September the 11th, 2001 does not happen.
I'm convinced it would not have either because I believe Bill Clinton when he said face-to-face, person-to-person, I almost said man-to-man, and that would have been one of the biggest misnomers I've ever put out in my life, because George Walker Bush is not a man. He told him, look out for this.
Yeah, thanks. Well, yeah, Iraq. That's where I'm headed.
Oh.
Well, do you what was it, March of 2001? And I hate to just go over this stuff, David, but it's worth remembering. We all need to remember this. In March of 2001, when we knew that supposedly Al-Qaeda had perpetrated, you know, the best that they could do until September 11, 2001, the best that Al-Qaeda was capable of was literally a rubber raft full of dynamite and the USS Cole. Or a truck bomb in front of an embassy in Africa.
Precisely.
Now, with all, you know, but that was enough to sort of light up the threat board for the Clinton administration. And they did tell George Bush. And he got documentary evidence on it. He got the Hart Rudman report on airport security. And in March of 2001, he was out there pushing for his missile defense system that had to have radio beacons on the missiles they were shooting at so that the missiles we were shooting could home in on them.
So that to hit the clay pigeons had to be held by a willing assistant.
Right. Exactly.
Precisely. And that's where we were. And let's not go conspiracy theorists and talk about how it happened, why it happened, what really didn't happen, what we were shown on television, and how the whole damn thing's one great big lie. Well, has anybody, you know, here I am, resident old guy, you know, and I'll take the curmudgeon banner and wrap myself in it happily. Has anybody mentioned a fond goodbye and pat on the back euphemistically? To Lloyd Benson, has anybody said, good job, Lloyd, thanks for being here? Have we marked the passing of that on your wonderful show tonight?
We have not. We have not as yet, and I'm glad you brought him up.
Well, I want all of the younger listeners, okay, here we go, younger listeners, it's that resident old guy, but I'll leave it break time. With one turn of a phrase, Lloyd Benson personally saved us from ever enduring any political career by that incredibly twerpy, rich boy, sneering, smart-ass snot, Dan Quayle, that cannot spell the English language. Lloyd Benson finished his insanely unqualified ass off in one turn of a phrase.
I knew Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was my friend, and you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy.
And the grave diggers, politically speaking, started right then and there. And I thank him for it. I thanked him for it then. It was a great chuckle. It was a big laugh, a lot of good times. And it was just another in a litany of hollow, stuffed shirt, twerpy, rich boy, privileged, nonsensical little moron that the Republican Party constantly advertises to the contrary. And enough Americans are either cheated or fall for. And at the voting place, they do something they regret later. But Lloyd, by golly, old Lloyd helped us all out. And it was a different time. I say right now, a good Democrat could call BS on a horrid Republican, and I'm not sure America has big enough ears right now to catch it. But America could listen then. Lloyd stuck him, and that was the end of it. America could listen. America could hear. America could understand then. Then you did.
And the sad thing is that effort was very well made, David. But if we're going to walk down memory lane, we might, you know, we gotta deal with the nightmares too. You know, that's the same campaign in which Bernard Shaw just tanked Michael Dukakis with one of the crappiest Republican wannabe friend of the GOP questions that has ever been asked in a presidential debate. You say you're against the death penalty, Governor Dukakis, but would you be against the death penalty if the person had killed or raped your wife?
The ultimate cheap shot blindside.
Now, of course, we must also remember that that was the same campaign wherein Michael Dukakis was seen driving a tank. But this was the same campaign that brought us Willie Horton and Lee Atwater. You know, Lee Atwater is the philosophical godfather to Karl Rove.
Without any question. And they knew each other, and they learned from each other. But a higher power invested Mr. Atwater with his just desert. Something he deserved richly. A terminal disease that left him aware of his own fallibility, his own weakness, his own mortality, and he recanted at death just before. But the damage had been done. He had spawned Carl and who knows how many others. I wonder how many other little rogues are running around Carl's skirts these days.
Oh, and that's the thing that goes to all of this, you know, the what ifs of Bob and his little time machine. You know, you get no Nixon, you don't get little baby Cheney and little baby Rumsfeld giggling and cooing and burping at his feet.
Oh, wait.
There are so many of these.
Cheney would have been back to being a state senator, and Rummy would have just been another guy that spoke in 45 word sentences that didn't have verbs.
Well, and a lot of gosh.
Yeah, precisely.
Gosh, well, yes.
Well, I'm going to impose my own quarter-hour break. I want to leave room for somebody else.
All right, that's fine, David. I appreciate it. Sorry to catch you unawares there. Didn't mean to.
Well, geez, I hope I didn't enter too clumsily. I don't think I, you know.
No, you did fine, because I'm glad you brought up Lloyd Benson, because His life, you know, Willie Loman, attention must be paid.
Thank you. I'm glad you would affirm the man, and Godspeed, Lloyd. Have a great forever.
Thanks, David.
Good night, Bob.
Bye now. Yeah, Lloyd Benson, I had him in the stack, and you guys, that's one of the things that makes it fun. You guys are as ready for the show as I am. You know, he came out of retirement, and this is one of those things that's worth paying attention to. When Bill Clinton needed a Treasury Secretary, he asked Lloyd Benson, and Lloyd Benson came out of retirement to be Bill Clinton's Treasury Secretary. When a Republican needs a Treasury Secretary, it's an opportunity to pass out some sort of a bonus to a crony. So you get Jon Snow of CSX Corporation, who just happened to sell a few billion dollars worth of CSX assets to Dubai Ports World before he took up the burden of public service. Do you see the distinction? Do you see the difference? Do you see all that Naderite crap about how there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans? Yes, sunshine, there is a difference, and it's a big difference. It's the difference between Lloyd Benson and Jon Snow. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Guy James means straight talk and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Hey, yes we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided they can't be with it, that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay. We're back. I'm Bob Kincaid, and you're not. welcome to Tuesday evening. A couple of things as we head into the top of the hour. The theft of the vets' data. You've seen this. You've heard this by now. It turns out that those 26 million names that we sort of worked through and figured out that was either on a laptop that went home or a couple of DVDs or something. Those were missing for the last 19 days. This is the Law Enforcement Administration. No wonder they need to tap phones. I mean no disrespect, they need to tap phones for the same reason that Helen Keller needed Braille. They're blind. They are benighted. Authorities waited almost 3 weeks to alert the public that personal data on more than 26 million U.S. veterans had fallen into the hands of thieves, a government source said Tuesday. Hmm. Now, here we go, and the answer finally comes out. You know, we sat and speculated last night. Hooray and congratulations to the tech crowd here at the Head On Radio Network. Our good friend Peter, our chief engineer John Fox, our webmaster and streaming engineer Ben Birch. The data were on a laptop and external drive stolen May 3rd in an apparent random burglary from Montgomery County, Maryland, home of a Department of Veterans Affairs computer analyst, said the government source who has been briefed on the issue. You know, he meant to take the external drive home that had his own personally modified copy of Doom. And he called the veterans database instead. God. By the way, the computer disk contained the names, social security numbers, and birth dates of every living veteran from 1975 to the present. And then there's Alberto Gonzalez. As soon as we were notified of the problem, we sprang into action. He said sprang. He said we sprang into action. I mean, this is like something out of Mark Twain's Fenimore Cooper's Literary Offenses. Mark Twain remarks that every time in James Fenimore Cooper's works, that no white man can walk through the woods without stepping on a twig, whereas Indians can. Yeah, maybe it was true, but you should read it sometime. It's funny. Fenimore Cooper's Literary Offenses. Alberto Gonzalez. Oh, what an incompetent, dangerous little idiot he is. As soon as we were notified of the problem, we sprang into action. We emulated the cheetah. We sprang. No, it was a leopard. Leopard spring. Do leopards? Ocelots. Ocelots spring. I'm focusing on what we can do moving forward to successfully conclude this investigation. Specific questions about what may have happened before, I'll refer to the VA. This is sad. 26 million people just got their identities stolen by random thieves. 19 days ago, and Alberto Gonzalez, oh, we sprang into action. Do us a favor. Do us a favor, Boyt. Hey, Boyt. Don't spring. Leave the springing to something. You don't spring so good. We ambled into action 19 days later. We ambled. We sauntered. We strolled. We strolled into action. That's what we did. We strolled. Jeepers. It's time for the top of the hour news. Let's do that. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network. You know how to reach the program, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. bob@headonradio.com is the email address. And you do know you can go to headonradionetwork.com and participate in the chat during the show and make it a wonderful interactive experience. For that matter, you can go there during the Guy James Show, or, you can go there anytime you want to. There's always somebody there wants to. It's free. And if you want to make it a little more permanent, jump over to headonradio.com. The message board's there. Lots of good conversation going on there. Gosh, we make it fun. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head-On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Air Force General Michael Hayden's nomination as CIA director won the endorsement of the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday in a vote that sets the final stage for formal confirmation by the full Senate later this week. The 15-member committee, which Republicans control by a single vote, approved Hayden's nomination 12-3 after an hour-long closed-door discussion. A new Zogby poll indicates that nearly half of the American public believes, quote, that so many unanswered questions about 9/11 remain that Congress or an international tribunal should reinvestigate the attacks, including whether any U.S. government officials consciously allowed or helped facilitate their success, end quote. The survey was of 1,200 adults via telephone. The Federal Communications Commission has told a Democratic congressman that they cannot investigate the National Security Agency's domestic data mining program because it's classified. In a letter to Massachusetts Democrat Ed Markey, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin said the program could not be scrutinized because it was classified. In a new audio tape allegedly made by Osama bin Laden, the al-Qaeda leader says Zacharias Moussaoui had no connection to the September 11th attacks on the United States. This statement surfaced on a website today. Prosecutors at the court-martial of an Army dog handler said Tuesday he was part of a crew of corrupt soldiers who enjoyed tormenting detainees at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Major Matthew Miller said in his opening statement that Sergeant Santos A. Cardona harassed prisoners for, quote, nothing more than the entertainment of the accused and the enjoyment of the other corrupt cops serving on the night shift at Abu Ghraib, end quote. Cardona is accused of letting his tan Belgian shepherd bite detainee Mohamed Bolendia on the leg badly enough to require stitches, according to the charge sheets and investigators' reports. Of the 100 U.S. senators, Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania, and Hillary Clinton, Democrat of New York, have accepted the most from lobbyists this election cycle, according to a report released today by the group Public Citizen. The report examines donations by the 50 biggest donors on the Hill. Santorum topped the list of those who have benefited most from lobby gifts, raking in a whopping $560,738. Clinton, the second biggest recipient, trails Santorum by over 25%, having taken $417,575 from lobbyists and political action committees. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Attorney.
CEO.
Eighth grader.
Publisher.
Retired.
No matter what the occupation or age, people who suffer from alcohol and drug addiction are all in the same boat. But with treatment, you can make it to solid ground. At any point, no matter how old or young you are, you can choose to get treatment. And through treatment comes recovery.
You can do it!
Mommy!
Come on!
We'll help you.
I made it. I really made it.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
The ACLU of North Carolina is asking for information on the Greensboro Police Department's surveillance of political groups. The request, submitted May 15th, stemmed from a clash between police and protesters at a downtown rally against President Bush in January. It was submitted on behalf of the World Can't Wait NC, which organized the rally, and five protesters. The ACLU is asking for all surveillance records on the World Can't Wait NC and the protesters, as well as police guidelines for surveillance. A year after combat soldiers leave Iraq, those with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder say they are in worse physical health, suffer more pain, and are more likely to miss work than veterans without PTSD symptoms, according to a military study out Monday. The anonymous survey of nearly 3,000 Iraq veterans is the first to look at a link between PTSD and physical symptoms. It was released at the American Psychiatric Association meeting in Toronto. In the survey, about 17% of the soldiers had PTSD symptoms. Compared with those without stress symptoms, they were much more likely to report all kinds of pain, from headaches to backaches and gastrointestinal complaints such as nausea and indigestion. The House voted Tuesday to further choke off the flow of U.S. aid to the Hamas-controlled Palestinian Authority, drawing the displeasure of the Bush administration and dividing the pro-Israel lobbying community. The measure, approved 361-37, would cut off aid to non-governmental groups working in the West Bank and Gaza, except for health programs, and would deny visas to members of the Palestinian Authority. Acts of violence have killed nearly 2,500 people and forced more than 85,000 to flee their homes in Iraq, the UN Assistance Mission in Iraq said Tuesday in a March-April report on the human rights situation. The fatality count was comprised by death certificates issued by the Baghdad morgue, the report said. The Medico-Legal Institute in Baghdad issued 1,294 death certificates in March and 1,155 in April, the majority of which had been deaths caused by gunshot wounds, it said. As a result of the pervasive violence, Iraqis continued to leave their areas of resistance either voluntarily or as a result of violence or threats by insurgents, militias, and other armed groups. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. Here he is. There I am. Buck and Kate. And tickled to death to be sharing my evening with you, as I always am. A little bit more fun from the theft of vets' data kept secret for 19 days story. Gonzalez and Deborah Platt Majoris, chairwoman of the Federal Trade Commission, lead the Bush administration's identity theft task force. Gonzalez vowed federal prosecutors would have, quote, zero tolerance, unquote, for anyone implicated in trafficking in veterans' personal data. You know, see, it's blanket statements like that that get you in trouble. Because if you back up for a minute, you have to realize that this was every veteran since 1975. And, you know, in light of the whole AT&T, Bell South, Verizon scandals, they've already trafficked in some veterans' personal data. Yes, Lord, yes. They have. Rutrell Yassin, he's technology editor of Federal Computer Week. That covers computer and information technology issues in the federal government. He says, you have to hope that information is not in the hands of people who know what to do with it. Well, what's your name again? Yeah, well, Rutrell, hope in one hand and in the other. See which one fills up fastest, buddy. And then there's Senator Larry Craig, Republican, chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, mumbling Monday that all veterans should be, quote, vigilant in monitoring their financial information for suspicious activity. Yeah, it's the veterans' jobs now. They've been poisoned, PTSD'd, shot at, bombed. But it's their job. I can't help noticing that every time the Bush administration screws up, it's somebody else's job to deal with it. It's enough to give you great faith in the ancient Greek concept of tragedy or hubris or any of those fun words. Because the Bush administration is just one long hubris escapade. Remember? Do you remember the statement when they took pride goeth before a fall? When they said the grown-ups were going to be in charge. You know, that ugly Clinton administration said, the grown-ups are going to be in charge. Well, let's see, the grown-ups, so far, world 122, grown-ups nothing. Let's see. There. Let's see. The grown-ups got us into a ginned-up, phonied-up, dummied-up war. The grown-ups got a spy plane shot down that we had to beg the Chinese to forgive us for flying. The grown-ups, then there's 9/11. The grown-ups looked at the CIA presidential daily briefing that said Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., and the grown-ups said, it's a historical document. These grown-ups I don't need. We're fed up with grown-ups at this point. Representative Steve Beyer, he's chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, a Republican as well. He said he's deeply concerned. Deeply concerned, in the strongest possible terms. I expect VA's Inspector General and the FBI to work closely together so that we can identify and eliminate the flaws that allowed this leak and prosecute any criminal acts. I know that VA is taking steps to notify veterans and provide help on consumer identity protection. Jesus. I mean, let's read that in real English. I know that the VA's Inspector General is busy closing the barn door now that all the daggum horses are gone. Nineteen days. On a laptop, an external drive stolen May 3rd in an apparent random burglary from the Montgomery County. Honest to God, isn't this... go back. Find the first reportage in the Washington Post. Oh, the Watergate break-in. An apparent criminal... Meanwhile, there's G. Gordon Liddy. There's the burglars. The plumbers. What did they call themselves? Oh, well, here's the missing data don't include health records or financial information. They do include some disability ratings and data on some veterans' spouses. Oh, but it was just, it's going to show up in a pawn shop in Baltimore. Sure. But is it too much to demand a little competence along the way? I suppose it is. Let's see. Can't run a war. Can't respond to a disaster. Can't balance a budget. Can't keep us out of deficit spending. Can't provide for the present or the future. Somebody tell me what these clowns can do. Oh, I know what they can do. They can rip us off. Just a little competence along the way, but apparently that's just way the heck too much to ask for. 19 days. This is the kind of, when you're a brand new driver, I know this because it happened to me. Then you get that first speeding ticket and they're going to take the car away from me, daggummit. And you just sort of ignore it and hope it goes away. But then you learn the whole data processing thing within the speeding ticket division, and it doesn't go away. 19 days, hoping that, please, can the Montgomery County, Maryland cops, they caught the sniper and stuff. Maybe they can find the dudes that stole the computer, okay? Oh, God, they're not going to find, it's going to come out again. Daggummit. This isn't the Bush administration. This is the Jethro Bodine administration. And I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic. Mm.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Emails from our good friend David up in Tennessee. Responding to a couple of nights ago, our good friend Wayne's predictions. You know, we babble about the NFL and sports and so forth from time to time here. And he writes in, says, with regard to Wayne's Super Bowl prediction for next year. Okay, listen, Wayne. You waited 40 years for the golden 70s. I waited 25 years for the return of the 60s as it relates to the Packers. Now, for the current era, the damn Steelers will be a good bet for a Super Bowl repeat. The Packers, let's just go 8-8, and we'll have Packer backers in the street dancing naked there now. Happy Wayne. All the best from David in Tennessee, who also, with regard to the veteran story, inquires whether the alert, because they sprang into action. They pounced on action. Asks, did the alert involve the color orange and duct tape? I'm surprised. I'm kind of surprised that it didn't. So, you know, your emails are most always answered on air. And when not on air, I try to get to them off air. That's just how much fun this all is. Yeah, and froze. I froze till 84 with the Giants. Says our buddy John Fox. Now, as we cruise toward the end of the show this evening, I like to follow up on some things when we can make sense of things as they arise. The other night last week, I mentioned the Supreme Court opinion that came down, I guess, a week ago today. It's the Cuno decision. That's the one where some taxpayers in Ohio had sued to stop a taxpayer-funded giveaway to Daimler Chrysler that caused, 184 people to be fired from the Toledo school system. And the Supreme Court, you'll recall, ruled 9-0 to throw the case out and say that the taxpayers didn't have what's called standing to bring the lawsuit. And I promised that night, Tuesday night a week ago, maybe Wednesday, possibly Thursday. I promised that I would read the case and get back with you on it. And I think we had some technical problems and I didn't get to get back with you as well as I'd wanted to. But what really presented the most glaring horror out of the whole thing was, A, it was a 9-0 decision. All 9 members of the Supreme Court got together to gang up on taxpayers. And, you know, I've read my fair share of Supreme Court opinions. I know what the language looks like. I know what it sounds like. I know what I can generally dope out what it is they're saying. And what they said in the Cuno decision was, we're sending this case back to the federal district court. And in sending it back to the federal district court, it's not like we're going to retry this thing. We're sending it back to the federal district court so the federal district court can dismiss the taxpayers' lawsuit because they have no right to bring such a lawsuit in the federal court system. They didn't even get to the issues of whether or not the taxpayers were being ripped off. They didn't get to the issues of whether or not it's constitutional to favor one company within one state. Complicated. Interstate Commerce Clause issues. They didn't get to that either. All they decided was the taxpayers had no right, and they're, like I said the other night, there are goodles of these suits around the country because people are finally getting fed up with watching, you know, your money. Remember, it's your money. Watching their money be given away to companies that don't need it in the first place. Go read, if you get a chance, and there's a link at the WhiteRoseSociety.org website to a couple of booksellers. It helps if you order your books through those links. Go read Greg Leroy, L-E-R-O-Y. Go read Greg Leroy's book, The Great American Jobs Scam. And it'll open eyes, it'll open doors, it'll make bells peal, whistles go off, fireworks in the air, and you will see, oh, this is a con of monumental proportions. Oh, what's that first big code word in the Da Vinci Code? How dark the con of man? Yeah, well, how dark the con of economic development. But at any rate, the whole idea was that they didn't reach any of the substantive issues that desperately cried out to be decided. They just decided that taxpayers in the United States can damn well go screw themselves for all the rights that they have to bring objections for petition for redress of grievances before the federal court system. That's all they did. So then, you know how my mind works. Something kind of goes click, 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 dots connect, triangulate, whatever phrase you want. Yesterday's New York Times headline, Chief Justice says his goal is more consensus on court. Bear in mind that 9-0 is a consensus opinion. This is kind of a fluff piece. It's not really, it's profile. It's not really news. But, oh, yes, it is. Oh, it damn sure is. Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr. said Sunday that he was seeking greater consensus on the Supreme Court, adding that more consensus would be likely if controversial issues could be decided on the narrowest possible grounds. In other words, this guy is a wimp. This guy is a coward. As you know, he's a Republican. Of course he's a coward. In a 15-minute address to Georgetown University law graduates, Chief Justice Roberts, 51, sketched a vision for leading a court sharply divided on issues like abortion, the death penalty, and gay rights. This isn't a vision. This is, well, some people would call it running away. We call it strategic retreat. He said he doesn't want any more 5-4 decisions. He says that's bad for the country when we have 5-4 decisions. Of course, that's code for I want nothing but a gang of right-wing thugs that will all vote the way I tell them to vote. The hell does he need that for? He's got Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, the liberal, voting to tell American citizens that they don't have the right to sue to stop their own governments from giving away the farm on a con. Now, he doesn't want any more 5-4 decisions. He says, this is the quote,
if it is not necessary to decide more to a case, then in my view, it is not necessary not to decide more to a case.
Jesus, this guy talks like Donald Rumsfeld. If it is not necessary, work with me here. This is where my old grandmother, bless her soul, would come in handy. She could diagram a sentence at the age of 90, you know. If it is not necessary to decide more to a case, then in my view, it is necessary not to decide more to a case. Is this, like, from Oscar Wilde or something? If it is not necessary to decide more to a case, then in my view, it is necessary not to decide more to a case. How long did it take him to come up with that one? Division should not be artificially suppressed, but the rule of law benefits from a broader agreement. The broader agreement among the justices, the more likely it is a decision on the narrowest possible grounds. Yogi Berra writes law. In other words, what he's saying is he wants to duck issues where he can unless it's along the lines of his political desires to not duck them. In other words, they narrowly decided Kuno. They simply decided that taxpayers have no right to bring a case before the Supreme Court. And they narrowly decided it by 9-0. And they didn't decide the underlying issues, which were legitimate issues of fact and law, the resolution of which is the entire purpose of the existence of the federal judiciary. But not according to John Roberts. Oh, I have a feeling we are going to lead a merry chase. We're going to lead a merry chase with this Supreme Court. How many? Look at what all's coming. Presidential wartime powers, political boundaries in Texas, abortion. It's all coming up, and he's just said he's going to do everything in his power not to deal with it, not to address it, unless, of course, it falls within his political purview. Remember, this guy's a radical religion industry freak. Scalia is an Opus Dei barbed wire belt-wearing foot washer. they're going to narrowly decide that you don't have any rights, just like they narrowly decided that taxpayers don't have rights. Narrowly decide that women don't have rights over their own innards. That's some narrow, that narrow. Well, we're going to take a break. Then we'll come back for the final half hour of the program. Your calls are welcome at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. God save this honorable cause. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Head On Radio News Labor Report, I'm Bruce Birch. The Memphis, Tennessee Firefighters Union gained a victory Monday in a showdown with the City of Memphis over wage increases. By a vote of 2-1, the City Council Impasse Committee accepted the International Association of Firefighters' proposal for a 1% pay increase for the next 2 years beginning in July. The city is proposing that unionized employees get no raises during that time. On June 6th, the Impasse Committee's decision is scheduled to go before the full council, which defeated a similar recommendation for the Memphis Police Association, 7-5. Still without contracts, registered nurses at two major tri-county hospitals in New Jersey say they are prepared to strike beginning at 7 a.m. on June 2nd if settlements are not reached before that date. Simultaneous strikes would involve 750 nurses at Cooper University Hospital in Camden and another 750 at Virtua Memorial Hospital, Burlington County, in Mount Holly. Nurses at both hospitals are represented by the same union, Emerson-based Health Professionals and Allied Employees, the state's largest union of its kind with 11,000 members. Leaders of the union that represents the bulk of the City of Detroit, Michigan employees announced this morning that they are accepting a contract offered by the Kilpatrick administration, which is seeking concessions from its workers in an effort to address the city's budget crisis. Details of the contract were not immediately available, but Al Garrett, president of Michigan Council 25 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, said the union is making the move because of the city's financial troubles. A recent campaign to unionize hotel workers near Los Angeles International Airport took a much more serious turn in the last week when the LAX Hilton suspended approximately 75 workers, many of them immigrants, and then reinstated them Monday. The workers were indefinitely suspended after they asked to speak with the general manager about a disciplinary action taken against their co-worker, Sergio Reyes. All this came after a Mother's Day action staged by hotel employees and their supporters called attention to the arduous working conditions, high injury rates, and low wages of housekeepers. A union leader at the center of a labor crisis in Mexico has sought shelter from the storm in Canada, creating another awkward situation between the two countries. The Mexican government removed Napoleon Gomez Urrutia from his post as head of the National Union of Miners and Metalworkers, Los Mineros, in February, accusing him of masterminding a $61 million money laundering scheme involving workers' funds. Urrutia had been highly critical of national labor and safety standards during his tenure and organized many wildcat strikes. He was replaced shortly after the death of 65 workers in a coal mining accident that he called industrial homicide. For the Head On Radio Network Labor News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Jim, welcome back. Are you with us, Jim?
Yeah. Oh, I just want to tell you something. Are you there?
Yes. I'm right here.
Yeah, I just saw this woman on TV. She said she was celibate. She said she sells a bit and she gives the rest away.
I got to get a snare drum in here, man.
But anyway, listen, Al Gore's going to be on the Today Show tomorrow, okay? That's reasonable.
All right. Oh, good. I'll try to catch that.
Who watched the Today Show, he's going to be on there as their main guest.
Good deal.
On NBC.
Well, thanks for the heads up.
That's what you might want to know.
Yeah, and thanks for the one-liner.
Oh, well, I'll do the best I can.
That's a dandy. Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye now. Well, I'm actually up that time of morning these days. I'll try to remember and catch Al Gore. As I mentioned some while back, some Weisenheimer subscribed me to Newsmax. You know, the wingnut, you know, between them and WorldNet Daily and Matt Drudge, you know, you just can't beat it for made up news. One of the things I just saw in my email box was this thing about how Dick Morris says only Al Gore can stop Hillary. And, you know, people don't – well, most of the folks I talk with and have conversation with look forward to a Hillary presidency about the same joy as they look forward to, say, an appendectomy without anesthesia. But even more so, though, is only Al Gore can stop Hillary. Hillary, Hillary, Hillary. And, you know, that's where you get the Friday the 13th sound effects. God, there's a whole cottage industry. I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. There's a whole cottage industry of wingnuts out there begging, pleading, dying for a Hillary candidacy. And I guess there's some poll numbers out somewhere that show that, you know, if the race was held today among people who answer silly questions in polls, that John McCain would beat Hillary by 2 percentage points. It's like 46 to 44. It's within the margin of error, yada, 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 yada. John McCain? Hillary? Oh, now there's a Hobson's choice for you. You can take the horse by the door or no horse at all. Golly, Ned. John McCain or Hillary? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's going to be John McCain on the Republican side because, you know, the Reverend Donald Wildman and that silly old child abuser, James Dobson. You know, they're not going to endorse Mr. Pro-Choice Rudy Giuliani. And I guess Bill the Cat Killer Frist still has some notion that he'd like to run. But it's McCain's to lose. And McCain is just twisted. I mean, this business, the girl that said, addressed the new school graduating class on the same day as McCain, you know, one of McCain's staffers came out in print and called her stupid. Gee, many. This is what they get. They're gonna have McCain. And, well, you know, let's see. As we look toward 2008, it is obvious Republicans would like to see their GOP nominee triumph. Huh? Most of these people have spent the last 8 years listening to Flush Flimball trash John McCain and going, yeah, that's right, Rush. Democrats clearly want one of their own in the White House, but there are many who want to see ABH, anybody but Hillary, get elected. Okay, well. No, that's not true. Given the choice between John McCain and Hillary, boy, I mean, the urge to just stay the hell away from the voting booth or leave that one blank is strong. But I'm not going to naderize America again. I'm not going to participate in that. I kind of loathe Hillary. I really do because... Well, if nothing but for the war. She will not stand up and say that the war was wrong. She won't say that it is wrong. This business about our 20-somethings think work is a four-letter word when 20-somethings are working as hard as anybody else in this country right now and probably in large part for less wages. The Republican spin on Hillary is what just slaughters me. The former First Lady's unique brand of transparently phony moderation, heartfelt inner socialism, Nixonian disregard for the norms of civilized politics and governance, and her well-documented tin ear on ethical issues make her the most dangerous aspirant for president since George Wallace, and he never had a chance of winning. You know, I mean, if you want to, I mean, if you've got a really, really strong stomach, if you're the kind of person that slows down to see if you can catch any of the fun part of a car wreck, go to News Morrison, News Morris, go to Newsmax. Let's see, how many ways have I just screwed that up? I was going to say, go to Dick Max, News Morris. Go to Newsmax and read this Dick Morris. Only Gore can stop Hillary. Gee. The more John McCain runs and Rudy Giuliani tests the waters, the clearer it gets that neither of these good men can command the Republican nomination. McCain is too independent, Rudy too liberal. Oh, wait, you got to get to Condoleezza Rice, long the object of our affections, George Pataki. If you've got the strong stomach, go read it, because it's hilarious. They're in total, complete, utter disarray. I mean, every now and then when we sort of look up and go, boy, are we screwed? Then you come back and you get the Republicans falling apart. Agnes wants me to take a break. Let's do that. We'll come back and finish the program. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves too from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
Betsy. I have no idea what happened. Well, we're done for the evening. And for all of you who participated in whatever way you did, I am greatly appreciative. I look forward to these 3 hours of the day more than just about any other 3 hours of any days I've had. So it's worth mentioning, as we always do, that my lovely wife Agnes produced the program. Brian Reznor announces, the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Our on-site engineer is Randy Kerbway. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org streams this program and all the other programs on the Head On Radio Network, as well as archiving literally thousands upon thousands of hours, millions of hours worth of downloads of liberal talk programming. He's the hardest working man in liberal talk, and I'm not kidding. Many thanks also to our good friend Shelby LaPrey at RadioPower.org, who streams this program in delay from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time the following day from its live broadcast. Shelby still has a fundraiser going on. She needs to raise $5,000 to replace equipment that was destroyed in a heinous lightning strike. Do the right thing if you get a chance. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers of Tallahassee, Florida. We'd be lost. Trust me, we'd be lost without Peter. The show happens every night, and every show on this network happens by virtue of the efforts of the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and by supporting the growth of the Head On Radio Network, they're saving the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.